Run for your lives, it's the Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast. The Medicare podcast only a mother could love. He wanted to be a cowboy, but became a Medicare expert instead. Doug Jones.
Well, guess what, everybody? We're back. I know that's why you were applauding, and I know that's why my Canadian nephew was talking to you about Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast. We are back. When I say we, I mean Randy and I. We're here for another day of sharing Medicare knowledge and trying to minimize or at least reschedule our goofing around. We used to spend the first 15 to 20 minutes of the episode free associating, telling stories, dredging up memories from our distant past, and sharing a couple of yucks here and there. But we're trying to be more disciplined. So we're trying to get the Medicare information out sooner and maybe leave the goofing around to later in the episode. And we'll see how that goes. I'm relying on Randy to keep me on track. But anyway, welcome to Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast, where we try to help people simplify and understand their Medicare choices that they may not be comfortable or interested in really learning about. And to that end, I've written a book called Medicare for the Lazy Man. Current edition is 2020, which is available on Amazon.com. And it's available in paperback and ebook or a Kindle version and Audible. So you can actually listen to these mellifluous tones. Randy says, ever since I redecorated my studio here with a whole wad of foam rubber, that my voice sounds entirely different, and apparently I'm not popping and spitting into the microphone as much as I used to. So hopefully you will agree that the tonal quality is somewhat improved. Anyway, I would like to bring Randy in now that I've talked about him several times. Randy Carson, why don't you join us?
Doug, I'll be glad to do that. How are you this morning?
I am just great. I have to tell you, though, up here in Illinois, this desert rat is freezing cold. The last 2 days, it's been in the 60s. It is no humidity and no warm temperatures. It's sunny, but it's cold. And I think that's what it's all about, living in the north, is being disappointed by the weather.
Well, you know, you could come back early.
I'm thinking about that very carefully, but, you know, I've got the next year's version of the book to write. And do we stay here while I write it, or do we go out there and write it? I'd rather be in Arizona, but there are other people in my entourage that I have to take into consideration. And so it's not a solo decision on my part. And so I'm going to have to be a good boy for a while before I seek permission to return to Arizona sooner than we normally would. So anyway, I talked about not goofing around before the Medicare content of each podcast episode, because I wanted to be businesslike, and that seems like it would take all the fun out of it. So I wanted to tell you that we have a holiday coming up that you may or may not have known about. And frankly, I'm surprised that I even know about it, because when somebody tells me something, it typically goes in one ear, falls through, rattles around, and maybe exits the other ear. But we have a holiday coming up in a couple of days. And I think I sent you the podcast episode checklist for this episode and then wrote it in after that. So I don't think you have it on your checklist. But there's an important birthday coming up on Thursday. Don't know how we're going to celebrate it, but it's Dominic Regina's birthday. And frankly, he is our fan who has shared his enjoyment of our many episodes. We're around 76, 77 episodes right now. And he sent us doodads and yeegaws. So I just want to say happy birthday, Dominic.
I would sing it. I would actually sing him happy birthday, but I know that would be way over the edge, but happy birthday, Dominic. This is Randy out in Arizona. We love having you with us, and you have yourself one great day.
Yeah, he might actually stop listening if he hears either of us singing anything, so it's probably best that we just do a polite happy birthday. Happy birthday, Dominic, and thanks for listening. We're glad to have you in the audience. Okay, our Medicare content for today is a little disjointed. It starts out looking like a mailbox episode, but it's not really. I am corresponding with a person who is very, very detail-oriented. His name is Steve. That's the only identifying factor I want to use. But Steve and I have been corresponding back and forth since the end of June. So we've been bouncing back and forth during the course of July and into August. And it started with a couple of interesting but short questions. And it has gone on and on and on. He started out, first question was, I was reading your book. And he asked about the Part B excess charges. If he had a high deductible Plan G, would the plan still pay for things like the Part B excess charges that doctors sometimes charge? And I was able to reassure him that they are legitimate charges that would be covered by his Part B. They would go right to the deductible of his high deductible Plan G. And then he asked further about various other things. During the course of many, many questions, and I've got Randy seeing a whole stack of paper that represents my correspondence with Steve, he sent a link to a publication. And he said, I read this, and frankly, I think it makes a lot of sense to me. So what do you think about this? Now, what he sent was the newsletter called CPA Insider. And I think it's from the American Institute of CPA, Public Accountants. And of course, that publication, oh yes, it's the Journal of Accountancy. And that publication is going to be fairly formal, stiff, and kind of arm's length. It's not going to be a fun goofing around kind of thing like we run for our podcast. And so I managed to print out 3 pages of this particular edition of the CPA Insider. And I wouldn't even bring it up except for the fact that it's about one of my favorite subjects. When people have to decide about Medicare, they first decide when they're going to go on Medicare. And then they have to decide what kind of coverage they're going to have. The two available are Medicare Advantage, which we don't recommend, and Medicare Supplement, which we, and I'm including Randy in this statement, we consider that to be a much, much more comprehensive and higher quality type of coverage in case people have Medicare expenses or medical expenses going forward. So we think Medicare Supplement is much better than Medicare Advantage. So that's the second decision people have to make. And then the third decision people have to make is, do they want comprehensive, fairly pricey coverage, or do they want the slim down, high performance Pontiac GTO of Medicare Supplement plans? That's the one I recommend. It costs so much less per month, and the downside risk is very limited. So I'm always a big proponent of high deductible Plan G or high deductible Plan F for Medicare participants. However, not everyone, because I think you have to have some confidence in your own health, and you have to have a little bit of risk tolerance. Risk, you can't be risk averse and have a high deductible Medicare plan. But anyway, this CPA Insider Journal of Accountancy talks about circumstances under which they think a high deductible Medicare plan makes sense. In fact, that's the headline: high deductible Medicare plan makes sense for some. And I think they've got it all wrong, because they're being way, way, way too safe and conservative. Here's what they say. They say that if you take the difference, now let's say that Blue Cross Blue Shield of Illinois a couple of years ago, for a 65-year-old, the annual, the monthly premium for a full-blown Plan F was $160 a month. And the premium for the high deductible Plan F, just using that as an example, was $50 a month for a person, a youthful person entering Medicare for the first time. Well, that was a difference of $110 a month. So if you take that difference times 12, you're saving $1,400 a month. I haven't done the math lately. A year, you're saving a fairly substantial amount of money. So if you're generally healthy, you only go to the doctor a couple of times, you're paying 20% of your medical expenses out of pocket. The rest of this savings is going right into your bank account. Now, if you have a medical expense that includes a hospitalization and a whole bunch of outpatient expenses, it's remotely possible you will use up the $2,340 deductible. In that case, your plan kicks in 100% for the rest of the year. But it really isn't as much of a risk as you think it is, because all the money you've saved while you've had the high deductible, either Plan F or Plan G, all the money you've saved really has gone to reduce your outlay. So you might have banked several thousand dollars during the course of time that you've had the high deductible plan. And when you have a bad luck year and you wind up spending maybe $12,000 in medical expenses so that your deductible is used up, then you have all of that money that you've banked to draw on. Now, if you're anything like Randy and I am, you've actually gone out and spent that on cheap beer and honky-tonks and line dancing lessons and things like that. But in reality, this is money that is yours that you would not have had you had to pay the full-blown Plan F or Plan G monthly premium, which is upwards of $150, $200, depending on where you are and what company you're with. So in my opinion, that's the way to look at it. The way the accountancy journal looks at it is to say, if you get into your 80s and you do the math every year between the cost of the, let's say, the regular Plan F and the high deductible Plan F, and you find your savings is larger and larger the older you get, just wait until you get to be mid-80s and look at that mathematical calculation. In other words, your small premium times 12 subtracted from what the large premium for the full-blown plan that you have would be, and you find a savings of somewhere in the neighborhood of $2,300, $2,400. Then they're saying, okay, make the switch to a high deductible plan because you're saving more money than your amount at risk. Well, I say that's crazy. Don't wait till you're in your 80s. Start out with the high deductible plan from the get-go, from age 65, because you'll start saving money towards your eventual use of the medical resources and your use of a lot of that deductible money. You'll start out from the get-go saving money every month. Let's say $100 a month, that's $1,200 a year. That cuts your risk right in half. At the end of the second year, if you haven't had any medical expenses, you will have saved $2,400. You will have saved, a few hundred dollars more than the actual deductible is. And remember, that deductible doesn't start in front. That deductible is the last few dollars of each claim. Medicare pays the first 80% of your outpatient expenses. So just another reason to think seriously about a high deductible Medicare supplement plan. If you're an old dude like Randy and I, then you can get high deductible Plan F. If you're younger, then high deductible Plan G is the plan of choice for you. So I'm going to go back and continue my daily correspondence with Steve And at some point, I'm hoping he decides to use us as his Medicare supplement insurance agent. So that's my whole thing about Steve and the adventures of the high deductible plan G. So sorry to burden you with that, Randy, but
if it makes you feel better, take the difference and put it in an account someplace so you can see it pile up.
So you can't go out to the honky-tonks and drink cheap
beer? No. That's just you and me. That's just you and me. Somebody else, you know, especially somebody with a CPA behind their name, would feel much better seeing that pile up in some other asset account.
Well, I know what my ancestors would do. They might not actually put it in the asset account, but they would keep a journal. And every month they would go in and scribble in the dollar savings. Then they might go out and drink the cheap hooch and have a party at the honky tonk and spend all that money. But they would be able to open that journal after a bunch of years and say, geez, look at all the money I saved. Instead of spending $200 a month, I spent $50 or $60 a month. And where did that money go?
Look at all that beer I was able to have.
Yes. Yeah. Well, some of us can look down and see where that beer is. You know, it's sloshing around in the gut.
Well, you're not going to believe this, Mr. Jones, but we have 2 minutes left.
Oh, my God. I'll tell you what. Let me do a hanging Chad.
Okay.
I've got a list of hanging Chad things. And I wanted to say this before because thanks to Dominic, whose birthday is coming up on Thursday. Happy birthday, Dominic. We were talking about model railroads and to some extent real railroads. And I wrote down, why do we think the gauge of full-size railroad tracks is what it is? 4 feet, 8.5 inches. You know, and all of this came from England. So why would the gauge not be a round number like 5 feet? Or 4.5 feet or something that makes more sense. Why would it be 4 feet, 8.5 inches? And I'll bet you know, I bet you've seen the reason, but you just don't remember it.
You know, I you're probably right. I've read it someplace. I'm trying to pull it up as to what it was all about, but I'm drawing a blank, Doug.
All right. Well, the railroad gauge is, the goal is 4 feet, 8.5 inches from one rail to the other. And they allow a little bit of, you know, it's the real world and it's out there with heavy freight trains running over it. So they allow from 4 feet, 8 inches to 4 feet, 9.5 inches before they have to reset rails and return it to true. So the gauge has a room for a little fluctuation. But what I've been told, and this is an email that went around, it was fascinating to me years ago. I saw this when email was kind of new, is that back in England, the roads were designed for the width of two horses pulling a wagon. And where did they get that? Because England was one of the far-flung stations in the Roman Empire, and the Romans used two horse-drawn chariots that were drawn by two horses. Everything that they did as a road was designed to accommodate the width of two horses and the wheels of their cart being pulled by the horses as they go across the earth. And of course, as you know, if you have enough horses and wagons going in the same direction in the same spot, you're going to wind up with two ruts. And eventually the British decided that when they were figuring out what railroad, how railroads should be constructed, they settled on the width of a Roman chariot being pulled by two horses as the ideal for their railroad construction. And as I said several times, the engineers that came from England to the United States to continue railroad construction just brought that with them. When I say engineers, I'm not talking about the engineers that drive the trains. I'm talking about the engineers that do the measuring for the construction, that do the planning. Those engineers, those architects and designers of the railroad brought from England, which originally came from ancient Rome, the width, the ideal width, according to them, of rail gauges. 4 feet, 8.5 inches, apparently, is what the Romans dealt with their horse-drawn carriages. So I thought that was a little unusual that something in our modern era dates back that far.
That is interesting. I really enjoy those types of fun facts. I've been known to throw out a few fun facts occasionally, and I'll throw out a hanging chad that we can pick up maybe next time.
Please do.
Speaking of ruts, within, well, let's say 4 miles of your house up in Cave Creek, there is a rutted road that was originally created by stagecoaches going across Arizona heading west. And the ruts are still there, and you can ride your horse up and see them. And the other thing that's interesting, I mean, it really takes you back. It's Spurcross Stables. It's Spurcross right north of you.
Right.
You can go up and see them, and the really cool part about it is these ruts literally go up the side of a mountain, and you're going, these people driving those stagecoaches had to know what they were doing. Otherwise, they were sliding off the side, and that'd be the end of it.
Well, that's pretty interesting. Let's definitely discuss that next time, because frankly, I didn't know those ruts were there, but we've been up to the Spurcross Ranch quite a few times. And so you're going to have to tell me how to find them and tell me a little bit of, about why they're there, why they picked that route. Which seems
Absolutely. But as you know, we have used up our gas today.
All righty. Well, let's say please read the book. Please buy the book, Medicare for the Lazy Man 2020. Hope you enjoyed the podcast. If you did and you're listening to it on a particular podcast delivery system, they might have a way for you to leave a review. And if you want to do that, that would be fine for us as well. And what else do we try to do? Oh, go to the website.
Go to the website. Yes, subscribe to the podcast. Yeah.
I think that's about it. We're not too demanding. We don't have too much stuff.
Actually, one thing we need to do is, obviously, you talked about your nephew at the front end of the episode and, you know, the fact that he's a really great announcer, and I get a kick out of listening to his stuff, you know, just one off. But having said that, we also need to thank our audience for joining us.
Absolutely.
They could have been a number of different places, but they weren't. They were here. And we enjoy having you here, and we enjoy waiting for the next time we can visit with you. So until then, you have spent about 32 and a half minutes with Doug Jones, the anti-insurance guy from MedicareForTheLazyMan.com.
We'll see you soon.